From WXXI News, this is the Summer of Food on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in 2011 when a new coffee bar opened on University Avenue in Rochester. It was called Joe Bean, which became a place where coffee lovers could not only enjoy outstanding coffee and espresso, they could learn new terms. There were classes and tastings or cuppings. Rochester got used to terms like cortado and pour over. The people behind the bar could draw seemingly anything in the milk of a latte, like a fern, or a heart, or Barack Obama reading poetry. Well, later this month, Joe Bean's coffee bar will close. Well, August 25th is their final full day open for coffee service at the University Avenue location. After that, they'll be open for limited hours as Joe Bean transitions a bit, doing more roasting and retail specialty. But the Joe Bean effect has been strong. In the 7 years since their opening, a string of so-called third-wave coffee shops and bars have opened in Rochester and across the Finger Lakes. Glen Edith, Fuego, Ugly Duck, Fifth Frame, that's just for starters. We're going to talk about the spread to the suburbs. We're going to talk about all across the Finger Lakes region. And I'd like to try to create a good coffee map this hour. So if you've got ideas, email them to me. We'd like to kind of keep them in that third wave mentality, and we'll define some terms. It's a conversation about coffee culture and where things stand in Western New York for those who love coffee. So Kathy Turiano, the founder of Joe Bean Coffee, is here. And we said before the hour even began, we are not here to hold a funeral for Joe Bean. Not at all.
Absolutely not.
So congratulations to Joe Bean.
Why, thank you. It's a congratulations.
Yeah. So what's the short answer on what you're transitioning to?
The short answer is, I guess the roastery has always kind of been the back of the house for us, and the roastery is now going to become the house. So we're really excited about focusing on our production area, our cold brew, our wholesale customers. But more than that, kind of getting back to some of our roots and some of the event-based stuff that we did, opening up that creative opportunities for classes and cuppings and pairings and, you know, all the things that we really did sort of in the beginning that has kind of gone away a bit for us just as we've gotten busier and busier. But we're excited to bring it back and bring more.
It's an evolution. Reports of the demise have been greatly exaggerated.
Yes, it is a total evolution. Honestly, we're really excited about bringing something, really that whole roastery concept, like going to the brewery. So you'll be coming to our roastery. And we think it's new. We think it's a new pioneering place for us.
All right. Well, thanks for being here. It's nice to have you back. Rory Van Grohl, Kathy knows well, the founder of Ugly Duck Coffee, which if you haven't been to Ugly Duck, Rory, where are you?
We are located at 89 Charlotte Street, downtown, right in front of our lovely Inner Loop fill-in, behind Hearts and the unfortunate closing of Two Vine right there in that parking lot.
And it's right near the little theater.
Right
and,
there, yeah.
So great to, great to have you back here. Thanks for taking the time in the middle of your day.
Thank you for inviting me.
You got it. And Matt Gridley is here, the founder of Mellow Mug, which is one of several really, really good places for coffee in the suburbs. Where's Mellow Mug?
We are in Bushnell's Basin on Pittsford Victor Road, sort of near the Abbots, right on the canal.
I've been a regular visitor to all of the places represented here and many other coffee shops here. For those of our listeners who think, is this going to get snobby? The answer is I certainly hope not. And I was saying these are like the least snobby people in Rochester in this room today. But I do understand, Kathy, over the years you've probably had some customers feel like they come in and I don't know the language, I don't know the terminology, can't I just get a damn coffee? I'm sure you've heard that.
A few times, yeah, Evan, I've heard it a few times. I always say that, you know, honestly, we kind of were a pioneer in the industry here. And when you do pioneer something and it is a little bit different, I do think you have to move people from where they are to something new. And sometimes that can be a little bit scary and they can look at it and say, I don't understand it. You know, how are you going to get me there? So honestly, a lot of the baristas that we've had behind our bar over the years, Rory included, were amazing at bringing people through this process. Really, truly amazing.
Well, if I were a real journalist, I would be asking, is the real story that all of your best workers stabbed you in the back by going to start their own places? You know, Wade is over at Fifth Frame. Rory is at Ugly Duck. I mean, you've got so many around town now. And I feel like, you know, if you want to say something to Rory, he's right here.
Anything I've wanted to say to Rory, I already have. No, not at all. And in fact, as he pointed out, we knew from the very beginning what we were bringing together. And I think that was pioneers are entrepreneurs, and entrepreneurs go on to not just change their own business and their own little community, but literally change a city. And we knew from the very beginning that what we were starting was a movement. And I always say that a movement is not one place.
Absolutely.
A movement really does involve multiple people. And you know, when we talk about third wave coffee, people think that we were kind of obsessed with latte art and flavor notes and things like that.
I was kidding about the whole writing, drawing.
No, but, you know, there really was an obsession that we had, and it was about coffee, but there was a piece that really doesn't get talked about a lot, and that was that respect and that love that we saw in coffee communities. And I've had so many long conversations with Rory about it and with Wade and with Jared, and you know, there really was this desire to create something that was based on that, and not just on the love of coffee and flavor notes and
sure.
all of that, but literally based on this love of each other and this, you know, mutual respect for one another, and to grow it at a grassroots level. So no, I'm not upset by it. I do expect that they all give me free coffee when I come in are really, really nice
there
to
you
me.
Go.
So, because I know a lot of their secrets.
Well,
too, so.
Rory is, I mean, they really are some of the nicest people in the city in the studio today. And so let's stick on that whole question on taking the barriers down for people who might feel the intimidation, because it's been a number of years now. But Rory, when someone comes in for the first time and they see you and you're drawing latte art that's a cactus that looks like a tree that looks like a cactus, and, you know, they feel like, I don't know, you know, what these terms are. There is definitely a moment where they might think, well, the easy thing to do would be to pop back to Starbucks or somewhere else. How do you work with people who come in who, like I did, I'm sure, a few years ago, saying, I have no idea what most of these things are. Help me.
Yeah, I mean, knowing that they need help, you only know what you know. And if someone's familiar with a Starbucks menu, we can definitely make you familiar with what our menu is. So it's just meeting them where they're at. If somebody is familiar with a latte, then that's where you start from. If they're familiar with a cup of coffee, that's where you start from. So you just meet them where they're at and not expect them to be anywhere else.
And there are stereotypes about craft beer, craft cocktails, craft coffee.
Sure.
There are stereotypes that, you know, it's an in club. Have you experienced it anywhere where you think, boy, this does seem, I'm not saying where you are, but have you been anywhere where you thought, well, this is a little standoffish, this is a little too cool for school?
Yeah, I think definitely people feel that sometimes where they see a very simple menu, and I think they're oftentimes intimidated by asking a question, and you just try to meet them with being nice and approachable, and I think that will take you anywhere.
You agree with that, Matt?
Yeah, absolutely.
Give me a sense for your work in Bushnell's Basin, because you took kind of existing space, but you wanted to take it to another level, knowing that customers there might be, again, you might be introducing something new.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that was our whole idea, was to sort of take something that was already familiar and just introduce new things. So we work with a lot of different roasters and stuff. And there's a lot of great coffee happening in Rochester, so it's been really fun to like explore that with our customers, sort of help them, you know, see what's out there, and you know, if they're interested in the same old thing they always wanted, we're happy to do that too. But it's really been neat to sort of explore new things and sort of bring people along.
Absolutely. I've been in all these different shops where someone will come in and they'll want, you know, like a vanilla latte or things like that. And you find ways to try to accommodate, or at least to try to work with folks. So as we go throughout the hour, I want to be clear, whether we're talking any of the subjects we talk about in Summer of Food, dining and beer and wine and agriculture and coffee today, the goal is not to exclude. And the goal is not to create sort of a cool kid language that only certain people in the club who know the secret handshake can do. And I think there is one thing that is tough, though, Kathy. It's I don't think there is a standoffishness in the coffee scene, whether it's Mellomug, Fairpour, and Fairport, you know, which is another good suburban place. If you go to the new Locals Only, if you go to Fifth Frame, if you go to Joe Bean, I haven't felt judged or sort of tested.
Sure.
But if the public thinks that that's there, if the perception's there, that's a challenge to deal with. Now, you hope that the first time they walk in, they meet Matt or Rory or the folks behind the bar at Joe Bean, and they go, oh, this wasn't so bad. But that perception may not get them in the door in the first place. Eventually, do you think, well, there's only so much I can do about that? Or is there more outreach that needs to happen?
I think specialty coffee in Rochester is constantly making outreach, if I could. So, you know, if you look at the history of Joe Bean, over the last 7 years, I remember we had probably 2 or 3 years where we literally took coffee everywhere that we could think of taking coffee. We took it to breweries and distilleries and restaurants and wineries and, you know, all these crazy places and just talked to people over and over and over again. And I think that was the strength that Rory did with the pop-up, you know, was that suddenly specialty coffee was showing up at weddings and at corporate events. And, you know, I think every time that you take something that someone might be intimidated by and you bring it into some place that they already know and feel comfortable with, you're breaking down that barrier. And I really, truly think we've done a lot of that over the last 7 years. And I think it's going to continue to do that. I mean, the very fact that, you know, the guys over at Fifth Frame now are doing beer and coffee, you know, we did beer and coffee, you know, with Rock Brewing when we probably 3 or 4 years ago. And now it's a new normal. I think you've got to, you know, there's always this like bringing somebody to the new normal. You know, you talk about latte art. It didn't exist, you know, 7 years ago. You know, we really teased that our first latte art throwdown had no competitors. You know?
Who's the best in this city, by the way? Who's the best latte art in the city?
I think that's really hard to say.
Depends on the day, the night. Yeah. You know, we just had a throwdown, and a barista from Gimme Coffee from Ithaca took it home.
Right.
Yeah. And yeah. Second was a barista, Clayton, who's at Glen Edith Coffee Roasters. Yeah. Right.
Oh, yeah.
I do think Sapphire took it to a whole different level, though.
Yeah.
You know,
cool
I
Sapphire.
Think that was Sapphire over at Locals Only. She worked for us, and she worked for Glen Edith and Wegmans. She actually worked at Wegmans.
Listeners are going, what's Locals Only? It's, I think, a month or two old, and that's near the corner of East and Alexander.
Yep.
So there's another example. By the way, I was there the other night, and someone said, oh, the radio guy's here. And I was like, I was like, well, and I turned around, and they were talking about Brother Weeds, who was actually sitting right at the next table. So I said, no one recognized me. Anyway, how is your latte art, Matt Gridley, by the way?
It's pretty good, depending on the day. I mean, you know, it's always a little bit of a toss-up, but yeah, it's...
Do people compliment you on your latte art?
Yeah, I think we hear a lot of that. Some people haven't seen it before, and some people are surprised to find it where we are. So
that's another thing that's cool.
That's fantastic.
Is the spread of this. So here's the list that I have, and please know, listeners, I am going to be missing some things, I'm sure, because if you go back 5 years ago, it would have been Joe Bean, Fuego was opening up, there was something called Founders. Is Founders still there?
I believe Founders is still there, yeah.
Okay.
That was John Cannon.
And... and who else? I mean, I'm missing. There was, it was a short list. And now the list that I have, starting with Joe Bean, Glen Edith has two locations. Well, it was poor, and now it's
right.
Glen Edith.
Right.
Glen Edith, of course, has two locations: Fuego, Ugly Duck, Fifth Frame, Locals Only, Fair Pour in Fairport, Mellow Mug in Bushnell's Basin, Amity in Penyan, Gimme in Ithaca, which just got mentioned. Monaco in Geneva, our friend Kelly Walker, our colleague Kelly at WEOS Finger Lakes Public Radio, telling us about Monaco, which I've not been to. Even the coffee they're slinging at McCann's Meats and Kevin McCann, they're very serious about that. I passed North Star in Farmington. I've not been in there, so I don't know if they're on the list or not. That's the list I have. What am I missing, guys? Which comes to mind here?
Oh, my goodness. Well, so many restaurants now are starting to do good coffee.
Yeah, and native, bars.
Yeah, Native. Yeah. Bar Bantam.
Bar Bantam serving specialty coffee. I mean, you have it on tap at Playhouse. Wilberger has.
Yeah, they have our cold brew on tap. Yeah.
On tap. I mean, Owl House has been serving Joe Bean coffee for years.
Yeah, they were one of our first wholesale customers, thanks to Rory.
Okay. I don't know. There's a slew of places serving it. I don't know if you want to consider it a specialty coffee shop. I mean, Mellow Bug switches it up, I believe.
I think even Wegmans has changed their game when it comes to specialty coffee. You know, there's been a real development
there. I wouldn't put them on the third wave yet.
No,
I feel like they're second wave.
Yeah, but it's definitely changed over the years.
Oh, yeah,
and I think
which
that's
we'll define,
a direct result.
We're
going to
define
you know?
The waves in a second here, which, again, some people don't like the terms, but I think we'll define it in just a second. Anything else that you've seen in the suburbs where you are?
I mean, Bronca does nice coffee.
Village Bakery.
Yeah. Yeah, Village Bakery. Yeah. A lot of restaurants are.
But is Village Bakery in the third wave or the second wave category? That's where it gets tough.
Yeah, I know.
Okay, so let's define it. Because for the shorthand for the coffee waves, the first wave is Folgers. and the best part of waking up. The second wave is Starbucks and, you know, shops that are a little bit more ubiquitous, a little more specialty drinks. The third wave is the Joe Beans and the Fifth Frames and the Ugly Ducks and the Mellow Mugs that are presenting coffee in a much more, I think, thoughtful way. I tend to think as a consumer, I'm always hopeful that the coffee that I'm drinking goes back to growers who have a good reputation and are getting a fairer price. That matters to me.
Sure.
But that's my shorthand for the waves. How do you look at the waves of coffee? Do you roll your eyes at the third wave, or do you think that there's something valuable there?
No, I think it definitely helps to have that term. I think sometimes, you know, it's a term that a lot of people don't know what it means. And then, you know, what's the fourth wave? You know, I think that coffee is such an evolving industry, and I truly do think that we're moving it into new places, and I see it, you know, coming. I mean, honestly, even like the beer and the coffee industry really kind of colliding and, you know, beginning to collaborate, and uppers and downers and, you know, all that stuff. So I think I don't roll my eyes on it, but, you know, it's not so set in stone for me, because I think it really truly is an evolving industry.
Okay.
Know?
Rory, how do you define it?
You know, I would say Folgers, commercial, just coffee operation. Second wave would be more place and specialty drink preparation. So you get those like Starbucks
Frappuccino
drinks, like blended drinks or whatever.
Yeah.
But I would say that Starbucks has been influenced by the specialty coffee by doing a reserve coffee space in Seattle.
Sure.
And then I would say, you know, third wave would be on that transparency side of things. So we are talking about how people are being paid for their growing practices and influencing that side of things. I would say the next evolution is restaurants, coffee roasters, breweries, like that whole influence and how we're interacting with those markets.
Okay. Matt?
Yeah, I agree. It's a little tricky to define, but I sort of look at it. So third wave to me is a little bit more like what's possible with coffee. It doesn't necessarily need to be a specific answer, but instead of sort of relying on what we already know, there's a lot of new things happening.
Okay, and so what I want to do also is understand the stories of Ugly Duck, Mellow Mug, and listeners. I'm already getting some emails on locations. I'm going to do a little research first, and we'll see if we can figure out if we can create this map of third wave coffee before the hour is up here, or at least maybe this afternoon. I'll sit down and take all the inputs and the emails from listeners or people weighing in on Twitter. Chris writes and just says, I'll miss Joe Bean as it was, but excited to see what's next for it. Glen Edith Coffee, locals only. We are dense in specialty coffee in the ROC. And he says, I love the exacting standards of specialty coffee and the focus on the optimization of flavor from the beans. It is my comfort zone. So I think that's a really good point, in that I, for years, was the Starbucks drinker who always ordered, you know, dark roast, dark roast, dark roast, which is interestingly, as I learned from author Murray Carpenter 4 years ago on this program, the guy who wrote a book called Caffeinated that I loved. The more you roast a bean, the more you burn out the caffeine. And
right.
So you want if you want less caffeine, dark roast it. Also, if you want to have homogeneous flavor that tastes like the next morning after a campfire, dark roast it. So now I'm always looking for a medium or light roast because I like a little more caffeine and I like the actual sort of inherent flavor of the bean itself. So no offense to Starbucks, and they don't just do dark roast, but that's why I have gone. But I took the education from talking to the Wades and the Rorys and
right.
the Kathys and the people to help me understand that. That's one of the things. What do you think people learn about coffee when they come into places like yours that maybe they hadn't thought of before? That was a big one for me. What do you see?
I absolutely roasting, I think, is such a still an unknown and not really anything that nobody at the dark roast, you know, is it dark, medium, or light? You know, and for us, there's just so much more to that. And the whole roasting side has really developed so much for us and the language around it over the last 7 years. And I think brewing is still the unknown, that the Mr. Coffee machines or the Keurig machines or whatever are still kind of like this standard. And, you know, you're introducing pour overs and espressos and, you know, we love being able to take the same coffee and present it in a variety of ways, and it blows people's minds.
Do you want to define pour over? There's a term you just use.
Sure. You know, just being able, there's a million different methods to do it, but taking coffee and grinding it and putting it into some kind of filter and then just pouring over water. So manually doing what the automatic coffee machine would do. But you're actually controlling a lot more of the elements of it. So you're controlling the temperature, you're controlling the time, you're really creating the end product very differently. But, you know, there's a lot of other, you know, we did the siphons and, what other brew methods did we do at our crazy bar?
Hario's, Chemex's, Clever's.
Chemex's, yeah.
Siphons, French presses.
What do you find that people are learning the most when they come in without a background in specialty coffee, and they come in and they become regulars? Where's the learning curve there that you see?
For us, like at our shop, you know, we try to meet them, you know, by space first, make them feel welcomed, and then the questions evolve after that. And I think people are more interested in where did the coffee come from, how did it get there, why is this better than this, you know, why is this right. better than Starbucks? Where is the evolution of space and product? And I think that's something that we can speak on a little bit of. And our industry is getting better at the transparency of that as far as farming practices. But I think we catch them there, and then we can really highlight those aspects of our industry and make them see that it's just not an after college or high school job. It is an industry that is a substantial profession for a lot of people.
I think one of the coolest thing as a roaster is having those farm connections, and we know the names of all of our farmers. Like we've actually visited them, and last summer one of our baristas had the privilege of going down and working on our farm.
Where?
Down in Nicaragua. He worked at Gold Mountain Farms down there, and it was really eye-opening. He came back and, you know, I had him write a blog every day that he was there. And, you know, we sort of watched it go, this is amazing. This is really hot. This is really hard work. These guys work really hard. This is amazing. You know, so it kind of evolved, and he really got a very eye-opening
That's great.
Yeah, experience as to what it's like to actually be a coffee farmer.
And now you think about growers who, again, let's not broad brush it, but there are certainly instances in many different countries where growers are not in wealthy communities at all, and they're growing these remarkable products, and they're not seeing a big chunk of the change for that. And now with these kind of relationships that are more direct, they can keep more of the money for that, for the great work that they're doing, which should be a goal for all of us. I think it's right. Just great stuff. So that's really cool stuff. What's the learning curve that you see in Melamug with your customers?
I think it's a similar story. It's a lot of the, you know, light, medium, dark roast and the brewing methods and things that people might not have seen before. So working with a lot of different roasters and having, different options, there's always something that looks a little different or is packaged differently, and it prompts a conversation. So people want to know, like, what does that mean when it says blueberry? Or what is a pour over? And we get to kind of explore that with them. So,
and if they say to you, come on, man, am I really going to be smelling and tasting blueberry? What do you say?
Yeah, I offer to prove it.
Taste it with me.
And sometimes they go, maybe not. And then sometimes you see the light go on?
Yeah, really.
Yeah,
pops.
Yeah. I mean, there are definitely, you know, better examples than others. But yeah, a lot of times it's a big change.
It was Tony Colon from Fuego 4 years ago who was telling me, you know, think of it like wine, and that you've got, right. you know, richer, sort of oakier, fuller bodied wines, and then you've got more acidic, you know, more acidity driven, brighter, more angular wines, and coffee is the same way. And sometimes that's by geography, and sometimes that's by other characteristics.
Sure.
But I found that to be totally fascinating, because then he started taking me through these different tastes, and I was like, I can't believe this is true. every coffee I've ever had tasted like a campfire until now.
Right. I think freshness of product, too, is such a big deal for us. And I think that's how you do taste so many of those different notes. You know, you're literally getting... You know, for us at the roastery, you're getting something that we roasted within the last 2 to 3 days. So freshness of product really makes those things pop. And I think a lot of the things that consumers are used to out there honestly are probably, you know, 1 to 2 years off of roast. You know, that's what you can really buy stuff that's that old, and it's going to be flat, you know. So I think that's one of the exciting things about going to these places.
Okay, well, I want to do this. Well, let's take our only break of the hour, and we're going to come back, and I want Matt and Rory to kind of share more of their stories on how their businesses are doing. And I'm curious to know, as newer coffee bar, you call it coffee bar, what do you call it, coffee house?
We just call it a shop.
Shop. Yeah. All right, so as newer owners, if you are seeing any saturation or if you think there's still room for growth. So we're going to get their stories. And listeners, if you want to share your favorite coffee haunts around Rochester Finger Lakes, again, I gave you the list that we could come up with before the program, but we're creating kind of a third wave list here. So if you want to do that, it's 844-295-TALK. It's toll free, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Got lots of emails and tweets, which we can go through as well. Kathy Turiano is the founder of Joe Bean Coffee. She's in studio. Rory Van Grohl, founder of Ugly Duck Coffee and a defector of Joe Bean. And Matt Gridley, founder of Mellow Mug in Bushnell's Basin. Just one of the growing list of suburban haunts for third wave coffee. Let's get that break. Come right back on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Friday on the next Connections, in our first hour, 3D printed guns. What is the future of this technology? Are they ready now to make effective weaponry like this? We'll try to explore the issues of what is legal and what is possible. In our second hour, we're talking about third parties. The Ohio special congressional election brought up questions about whether it's time to vote for third parties or stick to two. All right, welcome back to Connections. And my gosh, let me just open the second half hour with a mea culpa. How did I miss New City on this list? New City. I am ashamed they've been on this program. I go there. I was scribbling a list before the program began. John, Chris, the entire team at New City. They're awesome. It's awesome stuff. And to listeners who haven't been there, it's a place with a mission. But if you want to just set the mission aside, it's awesome space. Looks great. Coffee's great. And you know they're working hard to make sure people in that neighborhood too. They've got dollar coffee. They really try to make sure everyone can afford it, can be there. So New City in Rochester, awesome. Long list. We're gonna get to your emails coming up here. So before we jump to emails and phone calls, as we set the coffee scene here in Western New York, Rochester, Finger Lakes area, Rory Van Grohl, you opened Ugly Duck when?
June 2015.
Okay, so you just passed 3 years.
Yep.
At the time you opened, did you think, boy, there's a huge space for specialty coffee in the city, and how do you view that today, 3 years later?
Yes and yes.
Okay.
Simply. But, I mean, we started as a pop-up events mobile espresso bar and partnering with Scratch Bake Shop, Owl House, Swillburger, Red Fern, a bunch of different local spaces, businesses, and just connecting on that level with people, Fiorella in the public market, and then folk doing events and catering and laid that base and then opened in our space at 89 Charlotte Street in May 2016. So, you know, we've been there for a little over 2 years now. So,
and you will certainly have people come in to your shop who go into all the different shops around town. I mean, people sort of spread themselves out. You also
Absolutely.
Probably have some regulars, but has the growth been what you expected? I mean, this is everybody comes up with projections and how do we stay afloat business numbers. What
right.
How close to those numbers have you been after 2 or 3 years?
I would say we're doing better than we thought we were going to do. You know, there's always maneuvering within that aspect. You can't plan for your roads closing randomly because there's so much construction in front of us. But
you love that, don't you?
You yeah, adapt, awesome. You maneuver, and it's a marathon, not a sprint situation. And I think there's so much room for growth. The great thing about doing events is when we do events, do any wedding or any corporate event that we do, we always come across 90% of the people have no idea what we're doing. We're pouring hearts and rosettas and these things into lattes. And people are like, this is amazing. This is great. What are you doing? Where are you? So we always constantly have that conversation because we get out in the community and we try to do that and reinforce those relationships.
What's the future of Ugly Duck ideally?
What is, I mean, hopefully have a neighborhood, be it a neighborhood coffee shop once people move in around us and things lay low a little bit. Then we can possibly expand our hours there, really focus on our event side of things and being able to reach the community a little more on doing events.
What does the future of this city's coffee growth look like? How much room for growth do you still see?
I think, honestly, there's so many different adaptations that you can do with coffee, like with the new Joe Bean ideology of doing like more of like a tasting room. I think that's phenomenal. That's an awesome take that we can have on that.
Fourth wave.
Yeah, if you want, yeah, if you want to call it that, or you know, like there's so many different adaptations of coffee in spaces that we can accommodate and do. I think we could honestly get. We already do have as many roasters probably as breweries in the city. Maybe not from our quote unquote specialty side of things, but we do. And if we can shift that, then that's great. And I think we can get there.
I think per capita. From my travels, I think this city has really become an outstanding city and region when it comes to specialty coffee. And the difference between 10 years ago, 5 years ago, and now is remarkable. What's a city that you think blows you away with specialty coffee?
I mean, if you're in the coffee industry, you always think the Bay Area, you think of Portland, Oregon. Like those are the two hot spots and for specialty coffee and mm-hmm. saturation and what that looks like. It's like how many of these places can survive. And you can look at Seattle too. You know, the Pacific Northwest has just been really like pumping out lots of amazing coffees, but there's so many different models. You have a coffee roaster by the name of Ruby in Nelsonville, Wisconsin. And it's like a 4-stop town in Wisconsin. Like we're in an age where you don't have to have a storefront. You can buy roasting time on a different roaster and you can be a macro micro roaster and just do online retail and have a company. So I think there's a lot of different ways to navigate that.
All right, let me grab a phone call and then we're going to get Matt Gridley's story. This is Kevin in Rochester. Go ahead, Kevin.
Yeah, first of all, thanks for having these guys on.
Sure.
I'm not a coffee snob yet, but I'm trying to work my way there. I have a specific diet that I eat. It's called a ketogenic diet. And part of that diet is a bulletproof coffee, which I cannot find anywhere in the city, which is anybody know what bulletproof coffee is? Or
yeah, I'm
aware, yes. Yeah.
Yeah, we've heard of it.
So where can a guy like me and probably many others that I have to make it myself every day, but I would love to be able to swing into one of these places and order one for myself. But I don't seem to be able to find that. So any ideas? I've been to Denver quite a few times. My son lives there, and it's a little bit bigger out there. I actually call Rochester a little Denver, and they have some great coffee shops out there. I know you mentioned a couple other cities, but there's some good learning to be done from Denver, too, for this city, and which I love. And I'm glad it's on the rebound. But anyhow, bulletproof coffee, I would love to see it on somebody's menu soon.
Kevin, I think that's a great question, and there's room for bulletproof coffee in Rochester if anyone wants to take a crack at that.
Is it a roaster?
No, it's just a really high fat content blended coffee drink, is from what I understand. They take ghee typically, and combine it with coffee. You know, it's a newer thing. I think in the past 2 years, it's really like shot up there along with I think a lot of CrossFit. High fat content kind of thing. But I honestly have never had it. So yeah, there's opportunity out there.
There you go. And this is from Patrick. It says, I lived in South Florida for a number of years and fell in love with Cuban coffee. They actually do only about 5 different styles of drinks, which I thought was great due to the simplicity. My favorite was the culada. The culada, 2.5 ounces of Cuban espresso poured over cane sugar. It's traditionally shared and served with thimble-sized cups. It says, I would just drink the whole thing. It was a very potent and delicious drink. I was wondering if your guests could speak about Cuban coffee in South Florida and who among them has the best version of a culada. I don't know if anybody in this town's making anything.
I don't know anybody.
Personally, I have no experience on that.
Sorry,
one.
Sorry, yeah.
Matt, no?
I lived in South Florida and I've had Cuban coffee, but I don't know a whole lot about making it.
Okay. Well, now you've got a vote to do that. He says the closest match to a colada that I have found in Rochester is at Canal Town Coffee Roasters on East and Winton. So he says, big shout out to Peter at Canaltown and Culottes there. So,
sure. I think there is opportunity just as a roaster from our perspective. We've been on our own food menu at our bar and kitchen. We were bringing a Latino feel to the food because, you know, coffee comes from these cultures. And so being able to bring some of that culture onto our menus, I think, is always positive.
All right. Let me ask Matt Gridley, because there's this thought that when you travel to cities, the best coffee, the best cocktails, the best bars, et cetera, will be in the cities. And then in the suburbs is where Cisco lives and all, you know, like the mass produce. That's not always fair, see? And now you've got Fairpour and Fairport, which I think is really doing some cool stuff.
Yeah.
You got Mellow Mug, which is you guys in Bushnell's Basin. How did that come to be? What's the story?
It's actually my brother and I doing it together. We were on vacation in San Francisco having great coffee every day and just sort of falling in love with that experience. There was a little shop that we really liked and it just stuck with us. We wanted to create that sort of environment. It was really like it was a very community sort of feel. The coffee was amazing. And yeah, that's where the idea came from.
How long ago was that?
That was probably 4 years ago. We started Mellow Mug in February 2015.
So you've crossed your 3.5 years now.
Yeah.
And in a suburban space right on a canal, in a place where you try to get, you know, a decent amount of, I'd like to see more foot traffic in spots like that. There's a lot of, obviously, auto traffic. But how are you doing in terms of projections and reality?
I think we're doing pretty all right. I think it's projections are always different than reality. So it's
Rory's nodding right over
it's
there.
It's certainly a learning experience, you know. And there's a lot of variables. Similar story with construction in our area. But I think it's really catching on. I think, you know, the trend is going in the right direction, which is exciting. And I think the area itself is sort of growing in a way that's going to help a lot too. So yeah, I think slowly but surely we're on the right track.
There's a guitar in Mellow Mug with a little sign that says "Play Me," and there's a very comfortable feel there. I think you've created a space that feels comfortable, and I think that goes along with what we talked about earlier this hour, which is if you're going to do something specialty, you want to kind of break down what feels like it's impenetrable. And I think all of the places we've talked about have aimed to do that. I'm hearing from some listeners who are not only sharing talks about coffee, but the spaces that they love and just how comfortable they are and the people that they get to know. Do you feel like you've built relationships with some of your regular customers?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's one of the best things about coffee is the relationships.
Do you have days where you go, boy, we didn't see so-and-so. I wonder what's wrong.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Yeah.
So there's some dailies. How many dailies do you have over at Ugly Duck?
How many? I don't know how many. Oh. But yeah, it's amazing. I mean, you make these wonderful connections and you find so many opportunities have happened just because of serving coffee and connecting people with people. Coffee is people from it being grown to us serving it, and we're just the last portion of that chain to serving it. You know, like we've had customers or regulars come in and people come in and, you know, our baristas are looking for a place to live and all of a sudden they have a place to live because they have a room for rent or whatever. You know what I mean? So those things happen on a legitimate real level, which is pretty amazing.
What do you think, Kathy?
It was the whole vision behind Joe Bean was to connect people. And, you know, I before we sort of launched into Joe Bean in the city, you know, I spent a lot of time looking at what was missing for the next generation. And it really was a place. It was a place that they could feel like it was home and could feel like they could connect with people. And it was always at the root of what we wanted to do. And, you know, I'm a people person. I love them all. I love all the people that walk in our door. And it is probably one of the hardest things about changing our model is, you know, not seeing the day-to-day world of these, knowing their lives, knowing when they have babies and, you know, all of that is really special.
It was the late and great Deb Whiting, who was the chef at Red Newt Bistro on Seneca Lake, who would email me and tell me I had to check out Gimme Coffee back in what feels like back in the day now. It's a better part of 10 years ago. And, of course, Gimme is wonderful. Gimme's got a location, I think, still in Trumansburg, also in Ithaca.
Right.
So, but I'm thinking, along with, New York City.
Three mm-hmm. locations in New York, four in Ithaca, one in Trumansburg, I think.
Yeah, there you go. And so, but I'm looking at, again, the Finger Lakes list includes Monaco and Geneva, which I've not been to.
Great spot. They're doing a good job.
Amity in Penyan, which is the former Public in Penyan. I've been to Public. I've not been to the new version of Amity. But if we're missing, so especially if you're listening on Finger Lakes Public Radio for the best coffee or third wave coffee in the region, you still have a little time to add to the map. If you want to email the program, connections@wxxi.org, or you can call 844-295-TALK. It's toll free, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Taylor writes to the program and says, Evan, check out Leaf and Bean in Chilai for great coffee. Definitely more second wave than third wave, but this has been a staple in the Chilai community for the last 10 years. Hope to run into you there sometime. And Taylor is talking about coffee, but also a great coffee experience. Mm-hmm. And so thank you, Taylor. I didn't have that on my list, but there's a good example of someone lending. We got Coffee Connection, a number of people mentioning Coffee Connection around town. So thank you for that. And let's see here. Pamela says, wanted to lend to my name of favorite local coffee shops in Canandaigua. Dolly Java? I don't know Dolly Java.
Yep.
As in Dalai Lama, but Dolly Java. And of course, she says Finger Lakes Coffee Roasters in Farmington. So there you go. So there's a number here. I've got New Roots Coffee House in Greece, which I've not heard of and don't know. So there's another to check out. Do you worry eventually about any saturation, Matt? I mean, who are you competing with?
I don't worry so much about saturation. I mean, in our area specifically, there's not a lot of coffee going on. But I think in general, I think that's sort of the thing with coffee and the culture is it feeds itself. People try something exciting at Joe Bean, and then they want to come tell me about it, or they want to ask if I've tried that. Or I think it all sort of helps itself out.
So people will say, do you have this on the menu or have you had this? Have you thought about making this? That conversation?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
All the time, yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. Do you hear that, Rory?
I mean, yeah. I mean, I think the influence that Joe Bean had on any shop opening is like, do you have pour overs? Like, are you
exactly
going to do that? Like, that's a standard now when you're opening up a shop, or why don't you do that?
Or cold
brews.
That's
a conversation.
Or yeah.
That wouldn't have happened before that. So that's amazing.
Who is your competition? I mean, yours is more in the downtown places.
I mean, you want to talk about it from a business perspective. Hart's grocery store right across the parking lot is competition, so if you're looking at it in that perspective, the Starbucks that just opened downtown is competition. But we feed our community like Matt said, and that's important. We host events for each other and energize each other, and if we grow together, we all grow.
I do. I think we're really trying to transform people into making coffee places part of their daily world. And so once that happens, then the opportunity is for them to be in lots of people's daily world. You know what I'm saying? So we're really trying to grab more people to change their lifestyle in a sense, to go from place to place. And I think that's a huge advantage when there is multiple places in a city.
Let me grab another phone call, and I'll get an email as we go to the phones. Scott in Cornhill says, any third wave history should start with George Howell. I don't know that name, but...
Yes, yeah. He's the founder of the Frappuccino. Sold it to Starbucks.
Oh, yeah, sure. Wow.
There you go.
He sends a Boston Magazine article on George Howell, the coffee connection to Starbucks. So there's history I did not know. Thank you for that, Scott. And Heidi calling in. Go ahead, Heidi.
Hi, Evan. This is Heidi. I just wanted to make a comment. I live very close to Ugly Duck Coffee and was hearing the comments about how more of the third wave coffee shops want to become neighborhood coffee shops. I think a big part of that for me would be having them be more accessible and having more of them offer dollar coffee like New City Cafe has.
It's a fair point, Heidi. Thank you for that. And again, we mentioned New City Cafe in Rochester, which is not only hiring people very close to where it's located, but also trying to make sure that apart from specialty coffee, and not apart from joining its specialty coffee list, is $1 coffees and opportunities for people from different means to be able to afford it. And to some degree, it's going to be a challenge in any specialty industry, whether it's cocktails or beer or wine or food or dining. I mean, there's something that's probably inherently exclusionary is the wrong word, but maybe it's not. I mean, so Rory, how much do you think about that? And do you think about ways to try to get more people in the door?
I mean, you think about it all the time through the transparency model. I mean, we have a $2 cup of coffee. We offer people, if they bring in their own vessel, that we'll fill it up for $2. I think that's fair with what we're paying for the coffee if you want these places to remain open and viable. And we pay our staff well. We don't pay them minimum wage. We pay them a higher wage from the get-go. So I think there's things that folks don't see from the menu that we're trying to influence our community from the people working there and supporting them as well. But, you know, that's totally reasonable. And if someone comes in and say, this is all I can afford, we'll probably serve you that. It's not a big deal.
Okay. I was going to speak of it from the sourcing end. So we've actually launched a new sister brand over at Joe Bean called Fabricator Coffee. And it was really launched out of the fact that most of our coffees, the Joe Bean coffees, you would call them estate coffees. So we're buying them from one farmer. We know the farmer's name, we know who he is, and we're purchasing coffee from him. So it's going to be a little more expensive just because of that. But while we were visiting some of these communities, we realized that there were community lots that were regulated by sources that we trust. So they are fairly traded, they're high quality, but they're still community lots, so they're going to be a little less expensive. So from a sourcing end, we've started to provide both of those kinds of coffees from the wholesale end, just so that people could have a little bit of a range, but still feel like you're buying something that is good for, you know, good sourcing as far as it is. So,
okay. And Matt, do you want to address that as well? I mean, the challenge of paying a staff well and getting good product, but also trying to be as accessible to everybody?
Yeah. I mean, I think those are all factors, you know. There's a cost to do what we're trying to do, but it's really important that coffee is accessible to everyone. It's something that we're trying to share. The same, we have a $2 coffee, it doesn't take anything to come and have that and have our space. I think it's important to make it as available as you can. I think it's great.
All right, so in the last few minutes here, I will again let our listeners know, as we tried to create an extensive list of third wave coffee in Rochester and the Finger Lakes, I'll compile that. I'll get when we post the podcast, I'll try to create the full list there. It's so much bigger than it was when Joe Bean opened and there was Gimme, and that was just about it 7-10 years ago. And now this evolution has happened. Matt, for you, what's the future of Mellow Mug? Do you want to open more locations? Do you want to stay where you are? Do you want to grow where you are? What's the goal?
Yeah, we've certainly talked about all those things. What I would love to see is us really... And our whole area, actually, I would love to see it sort of turn into more of a destination. I think we're moving in that direction. And I think, you know, success for me would be, you know, really seeing, you know, Bushnell's Basin, Pittsford, and, you know, that area sort of thrive in sort of the same way that Fairport does. Or, you know, there are other areas that are similar that are a little bit ahead of where we are.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to see the basin grow in that way.
Okay. And Kathy, I mentioned to you before the program that, you know, you guys, I think you were kind of the seed for this area that has grown this. You know, the Rorys and the Wades and all these people who used to work with you are now doing their own things. And there's so many opportunities for consumers who want specialty coffee. And I had mentioned, and I want to get your take on this, any industry that wants to have high end has to have somebody driving that in its city. You will not go to Kansas City, which has some of the best barbecue, without tracing the history of, you know, Arthur Bryant and so many others who have sort of blazed a trail, which is why now there's all these options. But it starts off with one or two. You start training people. They do their own thing. Do you feel like there's a legacy there for you? And you know, I mean, do you have any pride in that?
Oh, how could I not? I'm so proud of all of these guys, really, truly. And I actually was reflecting on all this since you called yesterday. And in 2013, I actually did a TED Talk. It was called Partnering With and Releasing the Next Generation. And as much as I'd like to sort of take you know, it really wasn't my vision in so many ways. I really feel like what we tapped into, or what I tapped into, was their vision, and really began to release the Rorys and the Waits and my own son Ben, and, you know, all of these guys to do what they were going to do. And I'm just so proud to have any piece of that, and to really see it now, not only in their own individual places, but really truly in the city. I think it's actually transformed the city to be friendlier and to be a little more community-based. So, oh my, it's gonna make me cry just looking to the right, you know? So I'm truly very proud and honored to have had them any part of our Joe Bean life.
And down to our last 30 seconds, Rory, that sense of community, when people talk quality of life, when people talk about moving to areas, this is now something. The fascinating thing is the stereotype about younger generations always being on their phones, but the actual research indicates they want more face-to-face connections. It's one of the reasons we're seeing shops like yours thrive. Some final thoughts on you on building community, not just serving coffee.
I mean, it's amazing how many connections that we make across the bar on a daily basis by just welcoming people and saying hello and checking in. And it's enriched my life so much, and I know it's enriched other folks that come into our shop's lives, and it's just going to continue and spread outside of our shop, and that's the important part.
Ugly Duck Coffee is located where?
89 Charlotte Street, downtown.
Where is Joe Bean going to be, Kathy?
We're not talking about it just yet.
Okay. I thought maybe you'd want to break a little news.
Not just yet. Not TBD. Yet.
Okay. And you'll find Mellow Mug in Bushnell's Basin where?
616 Pittsford Victor Road.
Right around the corner from the bridge that's been closed for too long for Matt's taste.
Yes.
Great conversation. Thanks to all of you for being here. And listeners, thank you very much. It's the Summer of Food every Thursday at 1 p.m. Rob Braden, Evan. Engineering.
Thanks,
Tiana Magnon, thank you for all the great work. I'm Evan Dawson. Talk to you tomorrow.